Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the My Life, Your Life Together podcast. Zach, and with us, Sharon McCaskill, who we met on Facebook. Like, I remember growing up and everybody was like, don't talk to strangers, don't trust anybody online. And now we sign people up for full conversations off Facebook. It's great. So you're a registered dietitian nutritionist, which we're going to get into everything here, but just a little backstory on Sharon. Registered dietitian nutritionist, husband who's had some chronic, who still has some chronic illnesses. And that's kind of what got you into the nutrition field. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Definitely. So I'm curious to talk about that. I think we're going to have a fun conversation. And from the transition from you to helping your husband to starting your own business to then in turn help a lot of other people as well. Because starting your business is a mountain of an effort. We're excited to chat with you. And I always ask people just a little bit of backstory. Like I said, you didn't start out doing all this stuff. So tell us about you.
Yeah. So yeah, like you said, I career changed and I career changed in my mid 30s. I kind of joked it was my like midlife crisis, but in my 30s instead of 40s or 50s or whenever it's supposed to happen.
Your mid 30s crisis.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, for sure. That's exactly what happened. So if we go like way back, I mean, I already had a bachelor's and a master's in nothing science, nothing medical, like not that area at all. It was all liberal arts and business and just like the helping field. Like I took a lot of counseling classes. And I was working in higher education. I was working in like student leadership development and student services.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's kind of my background. And so this was not really on my radar at all until my husband and I got married. And like you said, he has some chronic illnesses. He has type 1 diabetes and he also has celiac disease, which those commonly go together. He had the celiac first. But so that's the first time I ever learned about gluten-free was through him. And I didn't know what the heck that was. It was not a thing that I was aware of at all. But when you have celiac disease, you need to eat 100% gluten-free. And that's really the only thing that you can do, or at least that is widely known that you can do to manage your celiac disease. There's some other like medicines and stuff that may help, but even with those, you still have to stay 100% gluten-free. So when we got married, I had to learn how to do the gluten-free thing. I had no idea about any of that. But fast forward, he just kept getting sicker and sicker, and we really didn't know why or what was happening. It turns out he actually has this very rare form of celiac disease called refractory celiac, that even when you eat gluten-free, your body acts like you're eating gluten. So he just was like malabsorbing food. He wasn't absorbing any nutrients. He was sick all the time, in and out of the hospital constantly. And it was kind of always my joke, like, if I could do it over, I should have done something medical so I knew what was going on with you, because doctors say things and I don't know what they're saying, right?
Like, right, you're like, words make no sense.
What does this mean?
Yeah, what is this? Potassium's low. Like, what, can you eat bananas? Oh no, that won't help. Okay, I don't know what this is, right? Like, it just was this whole I have no idea. So it was just kind of always my joke. Long story short, the Celiac Center in Boston, it's a whole part of the Harvard Medical Center that only works with people with celiac disease. He was hospitalized down there for like 8 weeks. They figured out what was going on and he's better. He's well now. He's working full time as an associate pastor. He just is doing really well. And at that point, he kind of looked at me. He's like, well, you know, you joke about doing it over. You could. Like, you could start over if you wanted to.
That's awesome.
You know?
Yeah.
He was working again. He's like, go do it. So I did. And I became a dietitian.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how did that... Well, there's a bunch of questions I want to ask. But I guess, first of all, how was that... when either you guys started dating or you got married, how was that just learning that whole process about celiac, about type 1 diabetes? What was that? Because even that in and of itself, I can imagine was a huge challenge.
Yeah. And I will say, back when we were dating and we got married, it wasn't as serious for him as it was like 2 years after marriage. That's when he really started having health issues. I mean, he had both of those before, but he managed them very well. Type 1 diabetes, he's always managed very well. But celiac disease was definitely more challenging for me. I don't know if, I think he would say his type 1 diabetes is more challenging for him, but for me as a caregiver, the celiac is more challenging because I had to figure out, like, here's what I'm used to eating, but how do I make that now? Like, I can't make this the same way. And I'm cooking pasta, but it's like sticking together. It's not normal pasta. And this bread is subpar, right? Like, how do I cook meals? So that was kind of the challenging part for me. That and then eating out. Like, where can we eat out? We can't just try this random hole in the wall restaurant. Right. No. Okay. We have to go somewhere else. Like, that was all very challenging for me.
So then he said that and basically encouraged you to make that switch. How did you do that? How did you go into, did you jump back into school? Like, what, how did that process go?
Yeah. So I was kind of burnt out at my job already. And so that was kind of what started it. My last year of working, I started a website. You know, everybody talks about like, oh, start this business online and see if you make money, whatever. So I was like, I like to write things. And people would ask me questions about gluten-free if they found out they had celiac disease or if they found out they needed to give up gluten. They, how do we do this? And I would tell them, and I'm like, I should just write it down and put it online. And then I don't have to explain myself a few times. Yeah, I'm just like, send it.
Here's the link.
Yeah, exactly. So I did that and I put a couple recipes up and some tips and how, like, our process of screening restaurants when we eat out, some of that type of stuff. And then random people started finding it, like on Google and stuff. And I was like, oh, how did this happen? Like, that was not really on my radar. And then I'm like, oh, could I make money doing this? It was this whole thing that I never realized. And so after a year of having my website and actually getting traffic to it and building social channels, which social media is not my favorite, but website stuff. Yeah, no, social media is not my favorite. But website stuff and like blogging, that was kind of fun to me. And I found it therapeutic to write stuff down and I really enjoyed it. And that was kind of what pushed it. My husband, we would meet with his registered dietitian and I saw how beneficial she was to him. I found it really fun and interesting to learn more about nutrients. And I was understanding why, you know, doing more of my own research, why is this happening to him? And so that was kind of what prompted that transition of like, well, I could take it the next step and actually work with people. Like, we're driving to Boston from upstate New York, right, to see this dietitian, but not everybody can do that. And that's, even though we can, it's challenging. Like, it's not easy for us to do this. So that's kind of what made me do that and why my husband was like, you could do it. So to make a long story short, that was a crazy process for me with zero science background. I had to redo prerequisites from undergrad as somebody who already had a master's degree. Like, I was taking chemistry, I was taking anatomy and physiology, microbiology, like all this stuff that I was
all
like,
all the basic sciences and stuff like that,
which was crazy. And then it was 2 years full time at, we actually have a college locally that has this program and it's actually a hard program to find. There's not many programs to be a registered dietitian in New York State.
Really?
Yeah. So, and I applied and I was kind of like, that was kind of my thing. Like, I'll apply and if I get in, I'll do it. If I don't get in, it's all right. Yeah. There's something else for me. And I did get in. So that was 2 years full-time of school after all of those prerequisites and then a 1 year full-time internship rotation thing. That's kind of like residency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I went on your website after we had been chatting a little bit and like, I know nothing about websites or anything, but as a, you know, consumer, like if your website's confusing, I will just click off of it immediately. And like, I enjoyed clicking around your site. And like, as somebody, like, I don't have anybody in my life, like family who has celiac or gluten-free or anything, but a lot of friends that do. And so I just spent like I don't know, probably like 30 minutes at work. Thanks, company. just like reading articles. And like you said, I think one of them you brought up was like screening restaurants, like how you do it and stuff. I was like, that's something that I never, like, would have never even crossed my mind that people have to do. And like, even though I've gone out with friends that, you know, oh, I need this on a gluten-free bun. Oh, I need this way. People who are more intolerant, not have actual celiac disease. Mm-hmm. So I just want to say I really enjoyed reading your website, even though I had no idea what I was looking for.
Cool. Thanks for saying that. I feel like, especially with websites and stuff, and maybe you feel like this with podcasting too, like, when you get better at doing something, you think it'll be easier, but then you realize like, oh no, there's all these other things I can do too. And it doesn't make it easier, if that makes sense. You start like doing fancier things and learning more things. So it's nice to hear that when I literally have a list on my wall right here of all the things I still want to do to my website. Like, I need to reorganize this. I need to categorize my recipes, you know?
So you mentioned that you were putting stuff online. Was that before you became a registered dietitian?
Yes. Yeah. So that was before I career changed.
So where did, because you put it up to kind of share it with people so that other people that were looking to learn could find it. Where did you learn those things? Was it kind of trial and error, or how did
That's a really good question. So, first of all, my mother-in-law, my husband got celiac disease when he was like 11 or 12. And that's before you would see anything in a grocery store labeled gluten-free. So she really had to teach herself all of those things. And she taught a lot of it to me. So I learned a lot from her. And my husband started going to that celiac center in Boston probably 6 or 7 months before we got married. And I took a day trip down there with him a few times when he would see the dietitian, and she was just a wealth of knowledge. There were all these things that we learned that we already knew, that my mother-in-law learned from her research, or that I figured out by kind of Googling or looking around. But she really brought up a lot of things that like would not have even been on our radar, that we would have never really thought of, or just tricks and recommendations and things that were like, oh wow, like I never thought about that. So she was excellent. And I think that that's kind of what inspired me to kind of think, you know, if I did something, like, what would it be? And like, oh, I have this website now teaching people, like, I could take it that next step and actually help people one-on-one and with their nutritional issues, if they're developing nutrient deficiencies, managing this in their home, all that type of stuff.
That's cool. So once you learned all that, did you see a big difference from when you had learned the stuff that you were just talking about from your mother-in-law, from the dietitian? Did you see a major change from once you went to back to school and learned more as a registered dietitian? Was there a big change there for you, or was it more backing up what you had already learned?
That's a really good question. Definitely a lot of reinforcing what I already knew, maybe more so than reinforcing, giving just like deeper understanding of the things I knew, like, oh, so this is why this is not like this, and actually giving like science and data to back it up, or having a better understanding of how metabolism works and how food's absorbed, and like, oh, this is why my husband was like deficient in some of these nutrients, because celiac affects this part of the body, right? So like thinking about things like that, it definitely gave me more knowledge in that area. But I think it gave me maybe a better understanding of just like the philosophy of eating and understanding some of these deeper issues that people have with food. Like, I think we all understand on some basic level that like food is cultural, food is community, right? Like, this is how we communicate with people. Food even has kind of the spiritual component too, right? Like, I know all throughout the Bible, right, it talks about like sitting down and having meals together, the early church ate together, like all of these things, and like recognizing that, and how when you have this issue where now you have to change the whole way you eat for a medical reason, right? Like it's challenging, that it kind of breaks down some of these other areas and how to kind of help people through that process. I learned a lot of that in school, and how to, you know, incorporate some of the more intuitive eating, right? Like, why are we craving these foods? And is that bad? Is it good? Is food bad? Is food good? Who is food bad for? Like, understanding a lot of those things on a scientific level, but also like a psychological level as well, I think was really helpful for me and something that I don't think I thought a lot about before.
That's cool. So you brought up faith, right? And we're both Christians. You mentioned your husband's an associate pastor.
Yes.
Right? So how has that been a part of this journey with like his health issues and your process of learning all this stuff and trying to help him and help your family? How has that factored into that whole journey?
I think in probably more ways than we could actually like talk about.
That could be a whole series of episodes.
Yeah, he's asking that question. I'm going like, even just looking at myself, I'm like, that's like 4.5 hours that I could spend on that. That's great.
Yeah.
I think that there are some really cool stories though, of especially when my husband was at his sickest. So when he was hospitalized for 8 weeks in Boston, I would say about 8 weeks before that, or 8 months before that, he was probably hospitalized for at least 1 to 3 nights every 2 weeks or so while local hospitals were trying to kind of fix him and send him home instead of actually doing that kind of academic, like, we're going to do a case study on you and, you know, observe you for weeks and figure out what's going on, which is what they did in Boston. And I think throughout that whole process, to paint a picture of just what that was like for us. So my husband, we had started church planting and moved to a town still near family, but like 20 minutes away from our local family, our closest family. And we had moved there to church plant and started church planting, kind of had a core team to do that. And then his health just went away and he actually had to pull back from working at all. And then we had to stop church planting, yet we still lived in this town and we had a 2-year-old. I was pregnant with our second child and it just, I was working full time and trying to manage his health stuff and him being in and out of the hospital. Yeah. And what do we do with toddler, my toddler, while he's hospitalized an hour away? And how do we do all of this? And I will say, like, throughout that whole time, I probably blocked a lot of it out of my mind, honestly, like thinking back, I'm like, I don't even remember half of that because I just was pushing through it. But there are so many stories of people in our home church, people that I knew in other churches, just other Christians, people that I knew from college, like that don't even live near me anymore. People that I'd worked with in Christian ministries back then, just ways people blessed us through that and like shared little bits of joy. Like I had a group of people that I had worked with before, Christians, that came and like cleaned my house one day while he was like hospitalized. Like I came home to a totally clean house. Like amazing.
That's awesome.
I had other moms from church that every night when they ate dinner, they just for like a week wrapped up like a single portion or two portions for me and my toddler. And like 1 week while he was in Boston, they brought those to me and they're like, they're all frozen. You can eat them when you need them. Like just things like that, that are just incredible. People watching my daughter so that I could go visit my husband. People that while he was in Boston, like people that were Christians that drove to Boston to sit with him for a day and like visit him.
Yeah.
Just things like that, that were just so amazing that even in those super hard times, like you could see little pieces of like joy or little blessings that I don't think I would have ever experienced something like that otherwise, if that makes sense.
That's awesome. Yeah. Kind of the whole, your whole Christian community coming together to support you guys going through all that. That's really awesome.
Yeah, it was really cool.
I see. He likes to ask like pointed, deep questions. And then I'm always like the opposite spectrum. And so like, what has been like your absolute favorite meal to that you've concocted for your husband? Like what is like the top tier dish that he's like, I want this?
I don't know. That's a really hard question. His deeper questions were easier. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I feel like one time I made this really good dessert and I've never made it again because it was a lot of work. It was some type of like icebox cake thing and it had like homemade whipped cream and stuff in it. I don't know how to explain it, but I made that one here. That was really good. I should probably make that again.
No, I was going to say, if he listens to this, he's going to be like, I want that.
Yeah, right. Can you make that again? But I don't know. I feel like what I do with recipes, like you can go online and I know people that are in the gluten-free food space online that come up with like these amazing bakery recipes. And I feel like that's what people miss the most when they go gluten-free. Like I want cinnamon rolls and I can't find them. So yep. I need to make them. Right. That's not me so much. I really create recipes and I hesitated to put recipes online at the beginning because of this. Like I just throw food together and make a recipe and I'm like, I don't know. I just used six random things for my pantry and made dinner. Like that's how
and
I
you're like, and it worked.
It worked.
Yeah. And it was easy. So like, I'm really kind of the person that when I look at a recipe online and it has like 15 ingredients, I'm like, no, not tonight. Like,
you're like, that's too complicated.
Yeah. I can't do that when I'm running kids to dance and they're getting home from school and they have homework and my husband is running out to church that night or whatever it is. Like, I don't have time for that. So a lot of our recipes, like we rely on things that go in the crock pot or the instant pot, right? Like different types of chilies and soups. We eat that type of stuff a lot. Yeah. Sheet pan meals that just go in the oven. So then you make like a rice bowl out of them. Tacos. We eat tacos a lot.
That's fantastic.
Spaghetti, really basic stuff.
Yeah. we've had an Instapot for so many years and then I remember one day my wife was like, I need a bigger Instapot. So I was like, okay, you know, get the bigger Instapot. I was under the assumption that we would be getting rid of the smaller Instapot.
No.
But no, now she's like, but now I can do two things at once for the same meal. Yeah. And I'm like, you're the one, you complain about the cabinet and the counter space. And so for the longest time, we would just have them in the room that houses the dog, the junk room of the house. And yeah, and at any given time, I can come home to like soup being made in one and like a whole turkey or not whole turkey, a whole like little chicken being cooked in another one. I'm like, oh, okay. I guess it is useful. I'm glad we didn't get rid of it.
Yeah.
I love Instapots.
For sure. And like, I thought when we got ours, I would get rid of my slow cooker and that did not happen either. Like I still use, like I'll make like soup or a chili in the slow cooker, but then cook rice in the Instant Pot at the same time.
That's awesome. Dinner.
But to reinforce that idea too, like when it comes to meal prepping and stuff, like I'm a huge fan of using those types of things in meal prep. Like this whole, I'm going to spend all day on Saturday and make all this food. Like I can't handle that. I have other stuff to do on Saturday. Right. Yeah, but like,
definitely.
I can spend 1 hour while dinner's in the oven, right? Like steaming some potatoes on the stove, cooking rice in the Instant Pot and cooking like a roast in the crock pot. Right. Like have it all going at once. Awesome. And I'm like, oh, look, now I can eat stuff all week. Right. Like having multiple gadgets gives you the freedom to do those things.
That's awesome.
And I'm a fan of them.
So I'm curious because obviously, well, I'm sure he shared this with you, but both of us also have type 1 diabetes. And I'm curious, you know, we know what the type 1 side of it is, but how does the celiac affect that? How much more complex does that become, you know, with the diet and what he can eat and how it affects the type 1? I'm curious what a challenge that was.
Yeah. So he got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes as an adult. So he was already used to managing his gluten-free diet. He got diagnosed gluten-free or with celiac disease at like 11 or 12. His diabetes was when he was 21 or 22 is when that developed. So that was, he already kind of had the gluten-free thing down. The complications we've noticed with that, with his gluten-free diet, is that gluten-free foods, like if you take the gluten food and the gluten-free food, you put them side by side and look at a nutrient label, the gluten-free food has more simple carbs in it than the gluten food and possibly higher sugar. Yeah, when you're looking at processed foods. So things like cereal or brownie mixes, things like that. And that has kind of gotten better in the past few years because they're doing a lot more grain-free foods, things like that, which I wouldn't necessarily mm-hmm. say are healthier, but definitely tend to have lower carb count, right? So yeah. that has gotten a little bit better, but like as hard as it is to, you know, bolus for like a bagel, a gluten-free bagel has more like quick acting carbohydrates. It has less right. fiber, that type of thing. So that's your definitely, spike. Yeah, that's definitely a little bit more challenging. The other thing that's more challenging is if your celiac disease is not well managed, your intestine is not going to absorb nutrients as well. So one of the challenges we had with my husband was when he was really, really sick and really met the criteria for being malnourished before his big hospitalization, he would get low blood sugars. Like there was one day he called me at work. I was working 45 minutes away and he's like, my blood sugar's low. Okay, what is it? 52. And I'm like, okay, there's juice in the fridge. And he's like, I drank it. Like, when did you drink it? He's like, 30 minutes ago. I'm like, okay, there's cereal in the pantry. He's like, I ate it. I'm like, there's soda in the back of the pantry. He's like, I drank half of it. And it's like still 52. Like it wouldn't raise because his food was not absorbing. Like we had to take him somewhere to actually get like it put in with an IV, like glucose through an IV to raise it. So that's one of the challenges you can have if you're like, gluten-free diet's not well managed and it's causing intestinal damage is like the food will not absorb correctly. So it was like he couldn't fix loaves.
Wow.
Which was crazy.
That blows my mind.
Yeah.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, it was super dangerous. And it's
I never thought about it from that respect before.
Yeah. And so like we brought him to an urgent care and we're like, he needs glucose. And they were like, eat these crackers and peanut butter. And we were like, he can't eat crackers. He has to eat gluten-free. They're like, eat the peanut butter. We're like, you do not understand. Like,
you don't get what's going on.
He drank soda and orange juice and ate like half a package of gluten-free cookies. And it's still like, peanut butter is not going to fix this, right?
That's like right. It's one of those instances where I flash back to, it was like an episode of Parks and Recreation where Ron Swanson's walking through Home Depot buying wood and like the guy comes over and he's like, what can I help you with today? And he just goes, I know more than you. But like, I'm telling you what we need. It's just, we need the sugar saline in the vein right now.
Yes. Just put it in there. Yeah.
It's one of those, you're sitting there having to use glucagon daily.
Yeah.
I can't afford that.
No, nobody can afford that.
Nobody can afford that.
No kidding. So after he got his celiac managed, all that kind of evened out.
Yeah.
Once he got like the diet and everything. That's super interesting. And so you say that as far as you know, type 1 and celiac actually are kind of commonly go together?
Yeah. If you have type 1 diabetes, you're at a much higher risk of developing celiac disease at some point in life. So often, I don't know if this happened to you when you were diagnosed, but I have a friend who got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. It was funny, is after I married my husband, she was my maid of honor. And she was teaching English overseas at a Christian school. Yeah. And I would talk to her and she's like, I have these weird headaches. I get really angry. She's like describing things. I'm super thirsty. And I'm like, you sound like you have diabetes. And she just kind of would laugh about it. But she had family members with diabetes. Sure enough, she had type 1. But after she was diagnosed, like they tested her for celiac right away. I think it's very common that when you get a type 1 diabetes diagnosis now, they test you for celiac to see if you have it.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was diagnosed as a kid, so it's been I think it's 22, 23 years now. So I don't remember, but then again, I was 11. I have no idea what they had. I just had a bunch of needles in me all the time.
They probably did not back then just because it was so uncommon. Like when my husband got his celiac diagnosis in the late 90s, he had to go to New York City to do all of his testing. Like it was not a common occurrence.
Wow.
Yeah, so. I didn't know specifically the two, but, you know, if you have one autoimmune disease, the likelihood of having another autoimmune disease is just exponentially higher. I had a long story that I don't even have time to go into. But basically, I had some left lower quadrant pain, and you know, by the time they did all their testing and whatnot, you know, the pain had resolved, blah blah blah. But they were hooked on working me up for Crohn's disease, and they were just like sold on the fact that I had Crohn's. And I'm like, okay, my single symptom was pain that self resolved in 8 days. Like, it's not. I just refuse to believe it. So I'd colonoscopies and other testing and blah, 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 like all this expensive medication, all to be like, okay, you're fine. And I was like, I remember saying, okay, cool. And they were like, keep taking the medication and follow up in 6 weeks. And the medication was $1 a pill, 3 pills a day or something absurd like that. And so I was like, oh yeah, no, I'm not going to take it. And tell me how to safely wean off of it, because I'm going to imagine that I can't just cold turkey this one. And so they came back like, all right, you can wean off, but you got to follow up in 6 weeks. And I said, oh yeah, definitely. And then I just left the office. And then 5 years later, here I am. So, you know, in my mind, I think I know what it was, but yeah, just them telling me, you know, if you have one autoimmune disease, the likelihood of having another has always stuck with me. And I think it like fueled my anxiety for a while. Then I just decided that there's zero point in worrying about it, because it's either going to happen or it's not going to happen. And that's that. And
yeah, it's definitely way more common once you have one autoimmune disease to develop others. But I mean, it doesn't mean that you necessarily will, right? Just because it's more common.
Yeah. So you got into registered dietitian, and then do you work that as your full-time job as well? Like seeing other clients, helping them with dietary issues?
Yeah. So I, right now am mainly doing stuff on my website and making money through there. I sell some like ebooks and courses and stuff through there, but I am currently working, I guess it depends on when this airs, but I'm currently working to start up my private practice doing telehealth, to work with people in New York, but there's a couple other states I can see people from too. And oh, that should be running by the beginning of May. So depending on when somebody's listening to this, I may be taking one-on-one clients.
Oh, that's cool.
This probably will come out, if not the first, the second week of May. Math is super hard right now, so
yeah,
it's going to be the beginning of May. I know that much.
There we go. Yeah. So yeah, I see clients.
Nice. That's awesome.
Is the private practice something that you've wanted to do, and it's just taken a long time to build it up, or has that come to your thought like in the last, you know, few months, year or so?
Yeah. So it's always kind of been something that I've wanted to do, is to work one-on-one with individuals. Just because I think you make a lot more progress in the one-on-one area. Right. But first I just really had a desire to reach as many people as possible with their lowest like expense possible. Right. What is easiest for them and what is the most attainable for them? So I really initially put my effort into things like ebooks and self-paced courses and things like that, that are definitely a lower price point and let me work with more people at a time, if that makes sense. Cause the downside of private practice is I can work exclusively with people one-on-one. We can do a lot more, but I'm limited in the amount of people I can work with.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's just the logistics of starting private practices. A lot.
And not getting sued.
Yeah. And New York is vague a little bit on their guidelines.
Of course they are.
For you, like telehealth as a whole. Yeah. So the pandemic was actually really good for increasing telehealth and making that more viable, because before that, it just was not legally as much of an option for people and was an extra hurdle. Right now, that side is much easier. But just the logistics of like, what can I do? Which states can I see people from? That type of thing is challenging.
So you had mentioned earlier that there's not many dietitian programs for school and stuff, does that also mean there's not very many practicing dietitians to see? Does that make the market kind of wide open?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. There are not many dietitian programs, and they're pretty difficult to get into. And on top of that, the academy, like, spaces are really limited for that internship year. So even if you can get into a school to get the education, you then have to apply to the internship and get matched. And that is trickier in itself, because those internships, like, some of them only have like 4 spots, right? Some of the programs at universities are like, we have 4 spots. It's just this whole other level. And the academy, which oversees the credentialing for dietitians, just this within the past year increased that you now have to have a master's degree to even start that internship. So it kind of made it even more difficult for people to do that process. So that combined with just the field that you can work in as a dietitian. When I started, I kind of just had the mindset of like, well, dietitians work in healthcare. They work in hospitals. They work in outpatient. They work in like nursing homes, right? That type of thing. And then they have private practice. And that's kind of my mindset. When I started school, I realized like, oh my goodness, there's dietitians working in food service. Like when you look at school food service for like, you know, K-12 as well as college, most of those are being managed by a dietitian. They're actually looking for a dietitian to manage those. Food companies and businesses are hiring dietitians. The field is just so big. Community nutrition is huge with dietitians. Yeah. You know, working in food as medicine programs, working in kids programs, right? Teaching kids about nutrition, nutrition education stuff. So even with the small field of dietitians that there are, they're so spread out through all types of programs.
Wow.
If that makes sense. So,
like the practice that we go to for endocrinology, they have dietitian nutritionists on the floor below us that are part of their practice, but like their turnover is not like high, but it's pretty quick just from the money driven attitude that comes with being not in your own private practice but part of a corporation, where like they get slammed with patients like back to back to back. They have no control over it. So like what you're doing, like you said, you get to put your value on your time and can take your time to help each individual patient client that you have, which is awesome. I feel bad for the patients who, you know, there's like a 7-month waiting list to get into that practice.
Yeah.
Just because they're that overbooked.
Yeah. And I can't imagine. I mean, when I was working in community nutrition during my internship year, I was working in a food as medicine program. So with individuals that had chronic conditions, but also were food insecure. So we would work with them and then give them food to help support their chronic condition, if that makes sense, like to eat well. And we saw a lot of people with diabetes that had never seen a diabetes educator. They were very confused. They had no idea how to count carbohydrates. They just really had very little education. They're like, I can't see, where would I see a dietitian? And doctors are referring them to these community resources because there just aren't enough in the area. It's tricky to get in with one. And when you're getting reimbursed for like 20-minute intervals, right? Like, I just can't imagine sitting down with somebody. I mean, you know this as diabetics, right? How do you teach somebody who may not have a math brain, right? And understand math, who may have never learned anything about how to read a nutrition label. They may not know what a carb is or what food carbs are even in. Like, they think meat has carbs, right? Like, they just don't know these things. Spend 20 minutes and teach them how to bolus for food. Like, I just can't imagine working with somebody that way.
Much less understanding things like you mentioned earlier between simple carbs and complex carbs and things like that.
People are that like, I got you this, it's sugar free. I'm like, okay, there's sugar alcohol in it. Like, that, like, it's still a carb.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
And it's going to wreck my gut. Yeah.
I don't want that. When I got diagnosed, I was 12. I saw the head of pediatric endocrinology in the hospital. Then I got discharged, outpatient, followed up. I've never seen an MD again, which I absolutely like I've seen nurse practitioners, but they were nurse practitioners who had their CDE as well. And like, I learned so much more from them. And even now we see the same PA who he himself is a type 1 diabetic. So like, even that goes even a step further. But yeah, like I work in the office right next door to who we see for endocrinology. I work in neurology. And so I get crossover with patients sometimes. And, you know, we get talking about diabetes and they're like, yeah, like I just got diagnosed and I've been seen with my primary until I get in with endocrinology in 6, 7, 8 months. And I'm like, how's it going? They're like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I would be fine if they said good or bad, because then I could, you know, help them a little bit. But when somebody says, I don't know, I'm like, that sucks. And so like, I get 45 minutes with them for something neurological, and 30 minutes of that I'm talking about endocrinology and diabetes, and just be like, until you get in to see them, try and do X, Y, and Z to help mitigate what's happening.
Yeah.
It's wild. So people like you is what people really need.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and well, it's
no pressure. No pressure. Don't screw up. But no pressure.
but I think it's hard too, because I think that there's also this level of people not necessarily knowing what they need. Like, I think we're just in this age of healthcare where a doctor hands you a piece of paper. Like, I've talked to so many people that get diagnosed with celiac disease. They find out they have to go gluten-free. They've never heard of gluten. And the doctor hands them a paper and they're like, here you go. See you later. And it's like,
right.
How do you even start? What do you even do? Like, I don't think people even know, you know, the next steps to take. How do they even move forward from that? And I think that that's super challenging, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those things too. Like, and I don't even know the full extent of it, because myself and my wife, neither one of us are celiac, but I know a couple people that are, and the amount of stuff that has gluten in it is just mind blowing. That I was like, you never would have thought, oh, this has gluten in it, that has gluten in it. And I think it's like you said, they get a little brochure at the doctor's office and they're like, all right, good luck. And it's like, you have to completely change your entire dietary lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I think we're also in a scary place too, where there's a lot of information circulating around online. I think there's a lot of fear mongering in this community. Once you find out you have to give up one food, I mean, I'm in giant Facebook communities, right? With thousands of people in it. And I just kind of see some of the stuff. I have to not be in them because it stresses me out a little bit, because I want to fix everybody's recommendations that they're giving people, right? And I have to, like, I can't just spend an hour, like, hours in here giving everybody advice, yeah, right? But like, there's a lot of like, well, if you're gluten-free, you need to give up all grains and you need to do this and that, and now you need to cut out all dairy, and I need to do, and so like, do some people need to do that? Sure. But like, I'm sorry, you just got diagnosed with celiac disease. Like, let's start at step one. Like, let's just give all of this up. Give it some time, because you've been sick for 3 years before you got diagnosed, right? Like, you're not going to just feel better after 1 week of giving up gluten. You also don't need to jump to not eating food, right? Like, you need to eat food, like, eat.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a lot of misinformation, and there's also a lot of stuff circulating like, well, this thing's gluten-free because I tested it with my home device. And I'm like, no, but your home device can't check for fermented gluten, right? And that's still going to give you a problem. And your device says that, like, it's not going to detect gluten in soy sauce or beer. Like, it's not going to detect that type of thing. And so there's just a lot of stuff floating around, or a lot of, well, I feel okay after I eat here and I've never had a problem. And I'm like, but this is literally not safe for you to eat. So like, it's okay that you feel good, like, good for you, but it's still causing you harm, right? Like, there's just a lot of misinformation floating around. And I think, you know, it's just, it makes me sad for people. Like, they just get handed this thing to like, go live your life now. And it's like, how do you navigate that? I think it's almost impossible, right? To like navigate something like that on your own.
On your own, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you had said something about like not knowing what ingredients were in something, and they're just basically they're trying to eat it and see what happens.
Yeah.
I had a reverse story of that. And what I mean by that is his brother-in-law, Jordan, he doesn't really tolerate gluten all that well. So he's taken to gluten-free dough when he makes pizza. And somebody, we were out on vacation somewhere. So we had made pizza earlier in the day, and he didn't really eat that much of it. And so it had been sitting out all day on the counter, and I guess it was undercooked too, but I didn't know that. And so it was like midnight and I was starving, and so I housed like 3/4 of this pizza. It was July summer. It had been undercooked, and then I woke up at 5 a.m and I was so sick. And so the next morning everybody's like, why were you throwing up last night? And so I told him that I ate it. He's like, there's like raw ingredients in that, and it was undercooked and it had been sitting in the 90-degree heat. Are you dumb? And I was like, you don't know what you don't know. I was like, yeah. If it was normal pizza, I probably still would have gotten sick too, but maybe not. I don't know. I'm not smart.
Yeah.
Do you have anxiety right now talking to me?
I mean, I just am thinking about all the like foodborne illnesses that were tested on my exam, right? Like my board exam. And I'm like going through like all of them, like it could have been this, it could have been this.
All the things you're sick with, like.
Because there was dough, there was cheese, there was.
This is all part of
me. Was there meat on there? What kind of meat?
It was all part. This is all part of my testimony.
This is how I survived. That's wild. So that's really cool, though. So there's the diet part. You mentioned your husband was deficient in a lot of things. Have you seen or do you notice more deficiencies and that causing more problems in other people as well, like mineral deficiencies or vitamin deficiencies, things like that?
Yeah. So people with celiac disease are so I'll back up. Sorry. If you have celiac disease, one of the reasons why I recommend that if you wonder if gluten's a problem for you, like you should go get tested for celiac disease before you mess around with maybe I should be gluten-free, right? Go get tested, because if you have celiac disease, you're actually entitled, like based on insurance and approval for things, you're entitled to things like bone density scans every few years as an adult. Oh, because wow. Because of that nutrient deficiency, like adults with celiac disease are at super high risk for low bone density, which leads to problems later in life, like osteoporosis, or even in younger adults that are super active, right? Like you're at higher risk for fractures, things like that. Having nutrient deficiencies with celiac disease is so common that it blows my mind that GIs don't just like recommend to everybody with celiac disease to see a dietitian who understands celiac disease just for that. Like,
yeah,
I talk to people with celiac that haven't seen a GI in like years and haven't had blood work done for nutrient deficiencies in like years. And that blows my mind, because I'm like, you very likely have multiple deficiencies just because of that absorption issue. And not to be like fear mongering or scare people, but just like, that's the reality of having something like this, right? Like,
and it's preventative.
Yes. Yeah. You can definitely catch a lot of that. Or it could be the sign that maybe you're not eating as gluten-free as you think you are, right? That could be the easiest thing, which that's the easiest fix, right? Like identifying those problems. Or it could be as simple as just like, you're going to take a vitamin D once a week, right? Or B12 once a week, right? It could be that simple. Yeah. And so a lot of times when people have celiac disease and they're complaining like, I eat gluten-free, but I still feel sick and I don't know why I'm tired all the time, I'm like, you probably have nutrient deficiencies. You probably don't need to give up 15 other foods. We could probably like deal with this, and you could eat gluten-free Oreos again. You know, like you can eat the things that you love to eat.
Those are good.
I've never tried them.
What? You've never tried them?
The gluten-free Oreos?
Yeah, they're good.
So I feel like there's another blogger that I've talked to before that also is in the gluten-free space because her husband has a condition that has to eat gluten-free. But we kind of joke that we have like an advantage in this space when we're like reviewing foods because we can eat the real thing and taste the gluten-free thing, right? Where a lot of these people have celiac, so they've never tasted the real thing. So they ask their like significant other, like, which tastes better? But we're like, oh, we know. Like, this tastes like this. Like, I was doing a food taste test with my husband of, there's this brand, Simple Mills, and they make little graham crackers. They're like little tiny ones. So you can't use them for s'mores, which is unfortunate. But like my husband, I tasted these and I was like, these are Teddy Grahams. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, this is a Teddy Graham. Like 100%. Like, you know, I just knew like any parent now that's like, oh no, my kid is gluten-free and they miss Teddy Grahams. I'm like, go get Simple Mills crackers. Like,
you're like, I've got the solution.
It's that. Brilliant. Yeah, that's, but the gluten-free Oreos are very, very similar to the regular.
Wow.
It's impressive. Wow. Like, I wish they would make more things, you know, that similar.
Yeah. That tastes that good. That's interesting. I've never tried them. I'll have to give them a shot.
Ariana usually has them.
If you can eat the real thing, I don't know if I would.
Why not eat the real thing?
Yeah.
Well, as a type 1 diabetic, I might.
You don't eat Oreos.
They probably should be avoiding Oreos.
Yeah, I was going to say, they might have more sugar than the regular. I haven't looked at the label that closely, but they might. Yeah. Because you have to make it taste good somehow, right?
See, I have to avoid Oreos just because if I get a pack of Oreos, I'm going to eat a whole sleeve in one sitting because I'm like, these are delicious. And then I'm in trouble.
Pair it with protein.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, peanut butter.
It'll help a little bit.
Insulin. Yeah. Oh, man. So
I just want to say thank you so much for taking some time with us. It's been like... Yeah, I didn't really know what to expect coming into this because, like I said, I don't know too much about, you know, gluten-free lifestyle, but, you know, you've educated me, probably him too, and you were just fun to chat with about it and getting, you know, more targeted towards like the dietary, dietitian, nutrition side of it. I mean, I always enjoy learning stuff and talking about that, so... We really appreciate you taking some time to do this with us.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, thank you so much for having me because it's been fun to kind of, you know, get to talk about a lot of this stuff, especially with other people who have like type 1 diabetes. I feel like most of the time when I'm, you know, talking to somebody, it's always focused just on the celiac disease or gluten-free or how do we make food or how do we eat out, like that type of thing. It's kind of fun to think about like the type 1 side of it too. And those extra challenges that come with that.
Oh yeah. Those extra challenges are super fun to think about. Thank you.
Super fun.
No, just kidding.
So if people want to find you, find your, you know, recipes or with this probably coming out in May, if people want to look into your private practice, where can people find you?
Yeah, so my website is thehelpfulgf.com. It's the same handle on social media platforms. So Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, it's all just thehelpfulgf. But if you search my name, Sharon McCaskill, you can probably find them too. But yeah, my website is where most of my content is. So I have some YouTube videos, right? I do some stuff on Instagram, but my website is really where all the resources are. I've reviewed so many food products, right? Like if you're wondering any question, like, is this random food gluten-free? Is mustard gluten-free? Is tofu gluten-free? Right. If you think these, I have articles just like written on the nuances of those with recommended products and brands, like tons of them. In addition to recipes and tips about what you can eat at certain fast food places, things like that.
That's awesome. And we will link all of those in our description for the episode. So everybody that's watching, go follow her, go check out her website, go check out some recipes. I'm going to go on there. I want to try some of the recipes.
Your wife is going to cook so much stuff for you.
Oh, yeah. me and my wife both love to cook, so we're gonna get on there and give some of them a shot.
All right, let me know what you tried, what you think, if I need to change anything.
Hey, we'll be good test dummies.
All right, let me know.
And for all of our viewers and listeners, thank you guys again for following, for coming and listening to us. And if you like what we do, if this was helpful for you, we ask that you would just share it. Like, follow, subscribe, share this episode. If you know people that are struggling with celiac or dietary issues or that are trying to go gluten-free, please share this episode with them so they can, you know, find more resources and get some help and grow. And
well done.
Yeah. Follow Sharon. And if you like what we do, buy merch. We got new merch out. So with that, we just appreciate all you guys for tuning in.
Yeah. And scene.